Les colloques du Collège de France.
So the first speaker this morning is Professor David Taylor Robinson, who is Duncan Professor of Health Inequalities at the University of Liverpool, Professor of Public Health and Policy, and an IHR Research Professor and Honorary Consultant in Public Health at the Alder Hey Children's Hospital. Sorry if I mispronounced this. So Professor Taylor Robinson, and she trained as a pediatrician and has expertise in public health, health inequalities, pediatrics and child health, epidemiology and statistics, as well as evidence synthesis. He leads the Health Inequalities Policy Research Group in Liverpool, which aims to improve health and reduce inequalities throughout the study of the determinants of health and well-being and the policies that impact them. He's also Academic Director of Health Equity North. Thank you very much, David.
Great, thank you. Thanks. Great to be here, and thanks, Maria, for the wonderful meal last night and the introduction and the chance to come and talk about the situation that we're facing. I'm going to talk about our work in the UK and the rising inequalities and the challenges that we've been researching. This is the latest UNICEF report card. You can all find your country on there. As usual, the Netherlands and Denmark and France come in at third when it comes to the ranking of children's health. The UK not doing great, towards the bottom of the rankings. The USA comes at the bottom of these international rankings. When we're looking at different domains of children's health, the UK does particularly badly when it comes to mental health and well-being. So we come at the bottom almost of this life satisfaction ranking from the PISA data in 15-year-olds. And one of the reasons why the UK does so badly on average is because of the huge inequalities, the huge social differences that we see in outcomes between rich and poor. And I've led a programme of work called The Child of the North that's looked into these geographical and social inequalities that we see in England, with a focus on the difference between the north and the south of the country. And in the work that we've done across different aspects of children's health, we presented this to the COVID inquiry. We had a big government inquiry into what's happened with health in the UK as a result of the pandemic. And there was a big focus on the state of children's health as we went into the pandemic and what happened subsequently. And our work and the work that other people have done has shown rising social inequalities at the moment across all of these outcomes: infant mortality, life expectancy at birth, healthy life expectancy, child obesity, mental health problems that I'm going to talk about, maternal mortality, women dying in pregnancy, kids being taken into care, into the care system, educational attainment at various stages, and also things like vaccination uptake. We can say a number of things about these inequalities. First of all, there's nothing natural or predetermined about these differences that we see within countries. They're a cause of a lot of suffering in society. And thirdly, they're preventable. We know we can address these inequalities through the organised efforts of society. This is one of the definitions of public health. And we've done a lot of work into what's caused these adverse trends that we're seeing in the UK. Here's my pal Margaret Whitehead, who was my PhD supervisor, my Lisa Burtman equivalent. So I've worked with Margaret for a long time, and at a very trite level, we know that social inequalities in outcomes, mental health, whatever it might be, are caused by social inequalities in the distribution of the main determinants of health, which are shown in Margaret's model. And we can obviously ask higher level questions. What are the power structures and imbalances and the racism in society, the gender inequalities, the decisions made by politicians implicitly and explicitly that cause those inequalities in the distribution of the main influences on health? And then, as Maria outlined, these aren't static. They affect children over the course of their lives. I often think of this like a Battenberg cake. You probably don't know, it's like a weird English cake. But if you imagine these different layers moving through time, affecting children over the course of their lives. And I guess a lot of our work has focused on this pathway, the intergenerational transfer of disadvantage, where the health and social disadvantage of one generation affects the conditions and the early health of kids and their development, which leads to adverse consequences in childhood, learning, etc., which affects the health and social disadvantage of the next generation. Here's a slightly more involved picture showing some of those pathways, showing how poverty, socioeconomic conditions, lead to differential exposure and susceptibility to a range of factors, material factors, psychosocial factors, behaviours. They're embodied through biological mechanisms that we're learning a lot more about, brain development, the early immune system, metabolic regulation. Those pathways lead to inequalities in child physical and mental health. We then see potentially inequalities in resources to cope with those problems, to prevent and treat those problems. And then as a result of that, we see differential consequences in adulthood, educational attainment, income, physical and mental health. In terms of what caused the trends in England, I haven't really got time to go through it in great detail, but we saw a massive austerity programme in the UK after the financial crash. The Institute for Fiscal Studies in the UK said that this is a report on the distribution of austerity in terms of its impact on households with children. They described colossal cuts and said that, you know, is this a fundamental reimagining in the UK of the role of the state? And as a result, we've seen record levels of child poverty. So in some estimates, 36% of children in relative income poverty after housing costs in the UK. We also saw massive cuts to systems that support children. This is Margaret always taught us to follow the money. So we've been looking at spending on services for children. This shows spending on early years support for kids in England by deprivation quintile, showing the biggest, almost a halving of spending, much bigger cuts in the most disadvantaged areas shown there at the top. And we're now reaping the consequences of these policy decisions. So there's a big debate in the UK at the moment about mental health that's mainly been driven by concerns about transition into the labour market. So there's a big government review into the rise in disability benefits that's been driven by mental health problems. So we're seeing this. This is a government review into mental health diagnoses in the United Kingdom. We're seeing a parallel review into the rise in young people who are NEET, not in education, employment or training. This was published yesterday, the first part of the report. It was all over the media yesterday. Record numbers of kids not moving into the labour market, driven by mental health problems which have life course origins. So we've been feeding data into this process. Okay, that's a little preamble into the context to inequalities in the UK. I'm going to turn to mental health now and just talk about some of the trends that we're seeing. A new global burden of diseases study came out just a couple of days ago in The Lancet, and it showed that globally 1.2 billion people have mental health problems now, and that's doubled from the estimate in 1990. So they compare 1990 to the current data. So there's a doubling of the prevalence and disability caused by mental health problems. Oh dear, that's gone wrong as well. So they also show the age distribution of different mental health diagnoses. And you can't see this, but at the bottom, it shows that the biggest burden of mental health problems is in kids who are under 20 years of age. So the biggest burden in terms of DALYs is in younger age groups. And you can see the map of the burden of mental health problems. Western Europe, Western European countries have some of the highest burden of mental health problems. But there are differences. There are differences globally which we need to understand. If we look at UK data, this is an analysis that we've been doing for our Child of the North mental health report, which we're working on at the moment. And it shows trends from SDQ survey data. We've got Understanding Society, which is a national survey. So you can see rising prevalence of mental health problems in young children, in adolescents. We also see the sex differences that we know about. You see a bigger burden in younger kids, in boys, which becomes a larger burden of anxiety and depression in teenage girls. And we see inequalities in these trends as well. This is an analysis that we've done looking pre and post pandemic in national survey data, looking at the prevalence of mental health problems by area deprivation. This is a measure of income, essentially, of disadvantage that we use in the UK. And you can see before and after the pandemic, there's been almost, not quite a doubling, but almost a doubling of the overall prevalence and almost a doubling of the social inequality. So a big increase in prevalence, big increase in inequalities. The next question I'm going to talk about is around, when do these inequalities start? How soon in the life course do we see social inequalities? This is data from the Millennium Cohort Study that I'll talk about. Millennium is a nationally representative cohort of 20,000 kids born in the year 2000, and we see them every couple of years. It's been one of the British birth cohort studies. And you can see, this shows social gradients in different outcomes, but you can see that the steepest social gradient is in mental health. So mental health seems very susceptible to things like income. In this analysis, we used Millennium Cohort Study data to look at trajectories of mental health longitudinally. So we were asking the question, you know, when do these start? Do the inequalities get bigger or smaller? Do they differ by sex? Do they differ by different axes of inequality, whether it's income or maternal education? And I guess to cut to, this is the data, this shows, again, SDQ trajectories. It's SDQ score, so it's not desperately immediately intuitive. But you can see the social gradient on the basis of income. There's a perfect social gradient that's evident as soon as we measure it at age 5. And then if we quantify that social gradient, these plots show that gap, the gap between rich and poor over time for behavioural problems, emotional problems, by maternal education and by income. And I guess what I find quite striking is that the inequalities are there across different domains of socioeconomic conditions, and they're pretty stable over time for both sexes and for both behavioural problems and emotional difficulties in the Millennium Cohort Study. Then we've been able to look at this kind of pattern across multiple birth cohorts. So this is work that's been done as part of the EU Child Cohort Network, where we've been able to look at data in this analysis across 9 different European birth cohorts. Maria's involved in this, including the French cohort, and asked the question, what do inequalities look like across all of these different birth cohorts? And this is what inequalities look like for externalising behavioural problems and internalising problems, emotional problems. This looks at the prevalence of mental health problems on the bit, and here are the most disadvantaged kids and here are the most affluent kids, and you can see consistent social gradients. I mean, they differ a little bit, but we're seeing inequalities in mental health as soon as it's measured across all of these European cohorts, and we can quantify those differences. Looks a bit like a forest plot, but each of these blobs shows the gap, essentially, between rich and poor as soon as it's measured. And although we probably shouldn't take an average of these, there's about a 10% difference in internalizing problems and a 10% difference in externalizing problems across the social hierarchy, across all of these cohorts, as soon as we measure these differences. We've been looking at patterns like this in population level linked data. So this is data from the whole of the Welsh population. So in Wales, we have data on about 2 million children from the year 2000 onwards, linked across health, education and social care, similar to the Danish registry data that Naya will talk about. And this shows the emergence of diagnoses of mental health problems in the Welsh population for girls and for boys. You can see the sex difference. This shows the cumulative incidence. So there's a big sex gap in diagnoses, but in the proportion of kids diagnosed as they transition into adulthood. And we see, and this is a bit messy, but it shows the inequalities. This shows the pattern on the basis of a measure of small area deprivation that we use in Wales. Showing about a 7 to 8 percentage point difference across the social hierarchy in the cumulative diagnoses of mental health problems in Wales as the population transition into adulthood. So inequalities start early. We see consistent social inequalities in these mental health problems. In this analysis, we're using millennium cohort study data. And we were trying to ask the question, you know, what are the main adverse risk factors, adverse experiences impacting children's health in the UK? In Millennium, we can measure, you know, we've got data every 2 years, and we looked at a whole range of risk factors, focusing on family adversities, particularly things like parental mental health problems, exposure to parental drug and alcohol misuse, family separation, things like this in the data. Here are the papers if you're interested in looking at these further. And here's some of the data. And we looked at how these adversities track alongside family poverty. So this shows in Millennium the proportion of kids in the blue bars who are in poverty. So children are consistently exposed to poverty at almost every wave of Millennium at very high levels. These bars show essentially parents' mental health, normally mum's mental health and father's mental health, but it's primary caregiver and secondary caregiver in Millennium. And you can see high levels of mental health problems in parents that rise over time, rising parental mental health problems over time in the Millennium cohort. And then we use statistics to create latent classes of all of these exposures over time. And these are the groups that we can characterise in the Millennium cohort study. So around 40% of kids in Millennium grow up in a low adversity, low poverty household. 23% of children are always in poverty. These are mutually exclusive groups that come out of the statistical model. A quarter of kids are always in poverty every time we see them in Millennium. And then there's a group where there are persistent parental mental health problems, 12%, and 11% where we see both. We see clustering of poverty and parental mental health problems. And then we look at relationships between these trajectories and a whole range of health outcomes. And as you would expect, all of these adversities are very bad for children's health outcomes. This shows any blob to the right of this line shows that children exposed to those adversities are doing worse. But we particularly see a relationship with mental health problems in children. So kids who grow up in families where there's persistent poverty and persistent mental health problems in parents are 6 to 8 times more likely to develop mental health problems themselves in Millennium, and a whole range of other adverse outcomes for kids. And then we ask the question, we calculate what's called population attributable fractions, which asks the question, what could the world look like if children grew up in a different environment? So this asks the question, what would happen if the UK, if all kids in the UK looked like this? What would happen if all children grew up in a low adversity, poverty environment? And the analysis suggests, if you believe any of these effects come close to causal effects, that we could get rid of over half of the burden of mental health problems as the population transition into adulthood, and a big chunk of other things like childhood obesity, cognitive disability, etc. And we've used this approach to look at other outcomes. We recently looked at suicide and mental health problems, suicide and self-harm in the 23-year-old age group in Millennium, and it showed a similar pattern. It showed that I'll skip to the population attributable fraction. It showed that around 40% of suicide attempts in the UK population are attributable to exposure to those adversities. Again, notwithstanding issues around causality, and in our Child of the North report, we show just how prevalent these exposures are in the UK population. So this shows that for different UK regions, so this is, I live in the Northwest in Liverpool, over 50% of kids are always growing up in poverty or always exposed to parental mental health problems or a combination of both. And it's these exposures which are really important and are driving a lot of the population burden of disease. We've done similar analyses in Danish linked data with NIA, and this analysis, which uses a similar approach in the whole Danish population to look at the experience of adversity. And this analysis shows the emergence of mental health problems in the Danish population by experience of adversity. And you see that kids exposed to high adversity in the Danish population, this is for girls and this is for boys, experience high and escalating levels of contact with mental health services. Again, emphasizing the importance of addressing early life adversity. Okay, so I hope I've made the case around childhood adversity being a major driver of these mental health problems. We can then further pick into some of the underlying mechanisms. So if you've got longitudinal data, you can use statistical approaches, mediation approaches, to kind of unpick this pathway. Some of our work has been trying to unpick these relationships. To what extent is the relationship between poverty and health transmitted through risk factors that we know are bad for health outcomes and that are associated with poverty? So if we can pick this apart, we can put bounds around how much we can achieve through action on risk factors. You know, to what extent can you break the link between poverty and health outcomes by, for instance, improving parental mental health? Or to what extent do we need to address root causes, childhood poverty? We wrote an article in The Lancet about the childhood adversity literature and how it tended to focus on this relationship here. What's the impact of childhood adversity on outcomes? But it kind of elided or obscured the fact that childhood adversities are hugely socially patterned. You know, one of the reasons why disadvantaged kids have poor outcomes is because they're much more exposed to a whole range of nasty things that happen to kids in society in early life. There's very good systematic review evidence showing that lower childhood socioeconomic position is associated with much higher exposure to ACEs, as they're so-called, and maltreatment across all of the studies in which it's been studied. We've written a methodological article recently outlining how you can use these causal mediation approaches to disentangle the pathways to inequalities, if you're interested in reading that. And I'll show you some examples. So in this analysis, that Sophie, one of my colleagues, led, we looked at how transition into poverty, everything else held equal in Millennium cohort study, led to an increase in child mental health problems and maternal mental health problems. And what we show is that when families transition into poverty, it almost doubles their risk of developing mental health problems subsequently. And part of the effect of poverty on child mental health is mediated through the impact of poverty on family mental health. We clearly see that in Millennium and in what's been going on in the UK situation. Children's mental health has got gradually worse at the same time as parental mental health getting worse at a population level. And then we were able to compare these mechanisms across two different cohorts. So we compared what's going on in the UK to what's going on in the Danish National Birth Cohort. So we can compare exactly the Millennium Cohort study and the Danish National Birth Cohort, they start at roughly the same time. So with some harmonisation, we're able to look at some of these mediation mechanisms. And here, so this shows the social gradient in the prevalence of mental health problems in kids at age 11, which is when we could compare the two populations. And you can, by a measure of social disadvantage that we've harmonised in the two populations. And you can see that the UK has higher levels of mental health problems in kids and a bigger social gradient than the Danish population. We then looked at one of the mediators. So one of the mediators we looked at was maternal mental health problems. And again, you can see that in the UK, there's a much steeper social gradient in mental health problems in parents, in mums, compared to the Danish population. Actually, the most affluent parent mums in the UK and Denmark have similar levels of mental health problems. It's just as disadvantage gets worse in the UK, you see a steeper rise in mental health problems. And it's this that explains largely the difference that we see in inequalities in child mental health between the two populations. We do a mediation analysis, and in the UK we show that a large chunk of the social inequality in children's mental health is explained by socially patterned maternal mental health in the UK, but not in the Danish population, where we don't see that social gradient. And then we've been able to extend this type of approach across those multiple European birth cohorts. So this is an analysis that will come out shortly, where we looked at the social patterning of a whole range of perinatal risk factors for adverse mental health problems. We looked at how they were socially patterned across the different birth cohorts. And you can see that some things are consistently socially patterned, but for other outcomes, breastfeeding, for example, there's lots of heterogeneity. And the heterogeneity in exposure to those risk factors explains some of the heterogeneity in the proportion of inequalities in child mental health that we can explain. Okay. So I've made the argument that mental health problems are increasing, they're socially patterned, they start early, they're partly explained by early perinatal patterning of risk factors and exposures in early life. I just want to, it's important to briefly turn to the role of healthcare inequalities. So Julian Tudor Hart, who's a Welsh GP, who in 50 years ago described the inverse care law. He said that the availability of good medical care tends to vary inversely to the need for it in the population served. You don't often hear the second part of the law. He said the law operates more completely where medical care is exposed to market forces. And we still see the inverse care law, even within the NHS in the UK, particularly with there's big concerns about access to children's mental health services around prevention and around treatment. This is an analysis that just in a cross-sectional cut of English data shows some of those inequalities. But I think this is an area where we need more work to look at the distribution of services and treatment that kids receive. We've done a bit of this in, these are our adversity trajectories that I introduced you to earlier. So we're working on this at the moment. This shows mental health problems at age 23 in the Millennium Cohort study by adversity trajectory. So here's our persistent poverty and poor mental health group. These young adults have higher rates of depression, anxiety, and psychological distress. And in Millennium, they're also asked, did they receive treatment? Did they seek treatment? So we're able to look and this shows that that persistent poverty and poor mental health group, they were more likely to seek help, but they were less likely to receive it than the low adversity group. So this is an example of the inverse care law. So groups with the highest burden of disease and poorest outcomes, less likely to receive help and care in the population. An important pathway to social inequalities across the life course. What are we going to do about these challenges? I'm glass half full when it comes to the trends in the UK. I think it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be the picture that we see at the moment. It's been largely driven by bad policy choices, and we've got inequalities reports, some of the world's first inequalities report. Margaret Whitehead led the Black Report 40 years ago, which was the first report into social inequalities within a high-income setting. The work of Michael Marmot, the work we've been doing trying to translate this evidence into policy, all says the same things. We need to invest more in the early years. And I guess we did this summary for WHO around reducing inequalities across the life course for children. Put simply, systems that support kids need to act early, they need to act on time, they need to act together. It's a prerequisite that we reduce the high levels of child poverty that we see in the UK and other countries. We need to invest in services proportionate to the level of need. We need better data to track the emergence of inequalities across the life course and to evaluate the impact of interventions. We also advocate a children's rights-based approach. And I'd argue that I find this completely shocking. This is the UNICEF rank for child poverty, which shows the UK nearly at the bottom of rich countries. That's on the basis of both the absolute level, which is 27th, and based on the increase. So we've seen this massive increase in levels of child poverty over the last 10 to 15 years. And that's what's driven many of the inequalities trends that we're seeing, including in mental health. And we also invest less. This shows public spending on early child education and care. This is OEC data. We invest less than many countries, France, Norway, Sweden, the countries that do well for mental health and children's health outcomes, invest more in the early years. Thankfully, we have the work that we've been doing has had some traction. We now have a child poverty strategy that came out at the start of the year. It will lift 500,000 children out of poverty over the next couple of years, but I would argue that it's just a start. So I'll stop there. I've run through a lot of data, but I hope that I've shown you some of the pathways to inequalities in health, how the rising prevalence of mental health problems is profoundly socially patterned. So any public policy solution to mental health problems needs to tackle those social inequalities. I've showed you some of the mechanisms. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.